It's referred to now as Baroque rock or Baroque pop.
Right.
You've heard that mm-hmm. label before.
Yeah, that particular song especially.
Well, I tell you what, Barry, since that's you're one of the co-writers on there, would you mind reading off the lyrics to the song?
Okay, 20 years ago in Speedy's kitchen, see the man out on the street selling strings and things so he can eat. 20 years ago, the cat had kittens. 20 years ago in Speedy's kitchen. Banus poured a drink for Sleepy Tom. Weasel drank it and the cat meowed. 20 years ago in Speedy's kitchen, we laid the plans to make us rich men. 20 years ago, 20 years ago, 20 years ago, we laid the plans to make us rich men. Thursday evening was Speedy's plan, Rocco's Tavern for 11 grand. But Jake the cop was there inside and started shooting when Rocco cried. Banus died and so did Sleepy Tom. Speedy ran into the river and drowned. 20 years ago, the state's DA took Weasel's help and sent me away. 20 years ago, 20 years ago, 20 years ago, we laid the plans to make us rich men.
And now, children, stay tuned for more story time.
Now it's time to decode the song. So let's start with the first character here mentioned is Banus. Who was Banus?
In the song or in reality?
In reality.
In reality, he was a guy my dad knew on the north side who owned a furniture store.
Banus was his last name?
No, Banus was his nickname.
Oh, his nickname.
I believe.
Okay. And the next character is Sleepy Tom.
Sleepy Tom is based on my aunt's, on my father's side, her boyfriend, Blind Jack Keller, who was a pimp. And my aunt was a prostitute. And when my father's parents died, he took my father and aunt in. And he was a pimp, and he put her out on the street.
All right, let's move on to Weasel.
Sounds like a song, doesn't it? It is.
Who's Weasel?
Weasel was my dad's childhood friend from the north side of Minneapolis. Weasel lost a leg at Iwo Jima.
Okay, and let's see, Rocco's Tavern. Is that based on a real place or not?
Rocco's Tavern is actually based on the name of a guy who probably committed a robbery at a bar in the late 40s.
Jake the Cop.
Jake the Cop was Weasel's brother, actually. He was a pillhead and a gambler and a would-be gangster who wound up dead, shot six times on the north side of Minneapolis in 1963.
Okay, so you took real people and sort of reinvented them and spun a new storyline.
I fictionalized the name
right.
and the character.
So there is some reality in here, and it's mixed in with quite a bit of fiction as well.
Right, which makes it fiction.
Okay.
Speedy, too, was my aunt's other boyfriend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did we miss Speedy?
Yeah, we missed. Speedy was my aunt's other boyfriend, my aunt's later boyfriend. And he was a famous fence and who used to be the main kind of the Costco for the freaks at the circus and the carnival. And he would sell them clothes and he was their Walgreens. He would sell them stuff when they would come into town with the state fair, the freaks at the freak show.
Wow. Yeah, I do recall.
Okay, who owned the cat?
Yeah,
who owned the cat?
Who had the cat?
The cat is totally fictionalized. We were just trying to...
And the cat had kittens?
Yeah, we were just trying to kind of get down to detail and, you know, what was happening in the room that was so banal. While it would be a shot in a movie of criminals sitting around planning a robbery and the cat meows. It's just attention to a detail, a silly detail.
And the narrator of the song took Weasel's help and sent me away. Who's me?
Probably the singer of the song, which in this case is Freddie Freeman. Sorry, Freddie.
Okay, so the me is
the singer.
The narrator,
song.
The singer.
Yeah, at the end it's revealed that the singer is actually going to prison.
Right.
He's taking the blame, the fall.
Did you ever get any idea of how many 45s that sold on the Parrot label?
No, but it was a hit in a lot of Midwestern cities and maybe out west too.
Do you know if it charted on Billboard?
I believe it did. In the top 100, like maybe 94.
It should have been much higher.
Yeah, it was interesting because I remember kind of like Honey kind of kicked it out of its spot. Honey by Bobby Goldsboro.
The tearjerker.
And it was kind of like that kind of took the oxygen out of what we were doing. And that kind of became the big melodrama. And then that was kind of late spring or summer, hard rock had kind of taken over, and the time for Baroque type stuff was over. Cream had kind of hit the stage.
So another song comes out, and it has Freddie Freeman singing lead vocals, and it is The Countess on one side, and the other side is I Can't Love You Anymore.
Right.
What's the story on those two songs?
The Countess was probably meant as the follow-up to Speedy's Kitchen. I believe TC Atlantic wanted something closer to their sound. That, you know, they were like a lot of bands in those days. They wanted to get back to their roots, you know. They didn't like all the production and stuff. I believe that's what happened on that one. But it kind of was like a song without a group, so we made up a group.
Now you and Gary Pollock are both playing and singing in the background, correct?
Of The Countess?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gary's playing. I don't believe I'm playing. I'm singing.
Oh, you're
background.
You're singing background.
Yeah. And Gary's playing piano.
And it looks like Gus Dewey from The Gestures is playing guitar.
Right.
Larry Hoffman on bass guitar. And
right.
is it Whip Lane on drums?
I don't think so.
Could it be Rod Eaton?
Very well could be Rod, yeah.
Arnie, you're on the B-side, right? I Can't Love You Anymore?
Yeah, and I think the personnel is pretty different on both of those sides of that record. I do know that Rod Eaton was doing an awful lot of studio drumming at the studio at that time at Candy Floss, and he was there all the time. He was on staff. I don't know exactly what that meant or what his position was, but Rod was there in a non-musician way, just taking care of some business there.
And I think he was an engineer for Dove.
Yes, he was.
Okay, well, yeah. That answers that question. I do know that one thing that should be mentioned as far as my participation in this is concerned, it helped me a lot that Steve Longman, who had been my musical partner, took an interest in what went on at the studio there and managed to get Arv's attention, Daryl Arvidsson, the engineer, and signed on as an apprentice engineer. And before too long, he became one of the main engineers there at Dove and did a lot of work there. And that helped me because he'd sneak me in at, you know, middle of the night, and we'd record demos for songs that we were working on. And most importantly, when they were recording this flip side to The Countess, it put me in mind as a guy who could fill out the harmony on the chorus. And so in this, I believe it was July of 1968, I got a call to come in and sing third harmony on the choruses of I Can't Love You Anymore. And I came in early, and I remember that by this time, Dale was not involved in Candy Floss. I believe that's the case. And so Gary Pollock had taken over some of the arranging chores. And I remember he wrote orchestral arrangements for that song, and I don't think he'd had much experience doing that. So he was constantly in and out of the control room fixing things that he perhaps had done not quite right, but hearing that it wasn't working with the string players. And so adjusting and rewriting, yeah, and going back and forth, right?
Dale had split with Pete by that time, and Gary, right, Pollock had taken over Dale's kind of job as arranger.
And certainly on that track, I remember thinking to myself, well, Dale's not here, but Gary's doing that part of it. And I think that on that track, if not The Countess, that Whip was playing. I think I was told that Whip plays drums on that, but I'm not
positive
about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think
that.
Whip is playing on I Can't Love You Anymore.
The B-side, okay.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about the bass player? Is it Larry Hoffman again?
Probably.
And Gus Dewey again on guitar? Or?
Yes, I'd say so.
Once I got in there, I remember very clearly the parts that were going on while I was there, which is Gary working with the string players, and then the three of us. Barry sings lead on the song, and I can, you know, I remember the lineup of Gary on one side, Barry in the middle, and me to Barry's right, and watching him sing the lead. I remember stepping back away from the mic for this one part where we were supposed to be quieter. It was a very memorable thing for me because I'd never been called to do a session before. And at the end, Pete gave me $5. I was a paid studio singer that day.
The I Can't Love You Anymore was meant to be our follow-up to Lights of Rome, the Shambles. It was going to be the next Shambles single. Sire didn't like it. It was so complicated back then. It was a potpourri.
Somebody got a deal with Sire Records on this. I assume it was Steinberg then.
It was me and Steinberg and Gary.
Okay. Yeah. And I believe Richie Goddard showed up for the session.
Yeah, he produced. No, he did not produce those.
Not
but
on this
he
one?
Did come in to produce some other songs that never got recorded. And it's a long story, but Richie did come into town.
He was not there for this session.
Those.
Okay.
Right,
no.
Because I remember meeting him after I joined the band, which I had not yet when we did that.
Yeah. Richie came into town when we were the Puddle.
And, of course, Richie Goddard, one-third of the Strangeloves, who put out an album with a little bit of a scam that they were, the three of them were shepherds in Australia. And
sounds right.
Dressed in weird costumes on the album cover.
Yeah, sounds right.
That's a new one to
me. And Seymour Stein also was, we signed with Seymour Stein. And Seymour Stein went on to be king of the world in the music business.
So now with the Eric Marshall and the Chimes 45, which apparently is a result of Freddie Freeman's real name, Frederick Marshall Freeman.
Really? I didn't know that.
Me either.
We didn't know that either until we interviewed Freddie on the phone a few weeks ago.
Wow. Oh, wow, cool.
So did this song ever get played in the local radio stations?
You know what? We had given a local DJ a fourth of the song. He proceeded to play it, and he bragged about, even though his name isn't on the record, he bragged on air about this.
I wrote that song.
This is a song he wrote. Did you
Here's
ever
the song
hear
I
it?
Wrote. Yes, I did.
I never
Here's
heard
one
it.
I wrote called I Can't Love You Anymore.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I heard it one time. I heard him say that.
Yeah.
Well, at least you got it on the air, I guess.
Yeah, it might have been a bit of a hit. I can't remember if that came out after Oscar Crunch.
Okay, so now at some point here after the Countess, Jay Lee returns, correct, to Minnesota and rejoins the
Shambles?
Yeah,
it's when we were rehearsing to be the Puddle.
Right.
There was an interim bass player, though,
mm-hmm.
because when the Puddle was very high concept. By the time I was brought into it, everything was laid out very nicely. Big Daddy Wags Music Shop supplied all our gear for a mention, you know, to be mentioned for the promotional aspect. Pepsi-Cola, locally, of course, had their name on it. And we had an itinerary. All the junior highs and high schools in the Twin Cities, some of these were big deals. And our record was played on KDWB, and it charted on KDWB. And all of our gigs initially for these appearances, which were called Pepsi Pop Hops, POP-HOPS, were hosted by True Down Blue, who traveled with us. Now, initially, this plan was set up, but before the gigs actually started, Steve Longman, my former music partner and my friend to this day, was the bass player. That was his first thing to do in music was to play bass in various bands. And he practiced with us, but then his workload at the studio as engineer became so heavy, he had to bow out. And at that time, as you say, Jay had moved back to the Twin Cities. And you guys, it was, he just fit back into his old job. I remember we were on our way to a rehearsal. I popped into the car and sitting in the back seat, this is Jay, our once and future bass player. And we met. So by the time the very first gig, Pepsi Pop-Up with the Puddle, Jay was then back in the group. It was myself, Barry, Gary, Whip, and Jay.
And Pete.
And Pete, yes. Pete wanted to be, and, you know, he was in charge. He was a full member of the Puddle.
Now, I understand the band members wore rather unusual stage costumes.
Right.
Pete dressed as an Indian chief, less sensitive times. Whip, our drummer, dressed as an admiral, a Navy admiral, in a white suit with epaulets and a hat, you know, captain's hat. Gary dressed in a 1920s full bathing suit, two-piece bathing suit. Barry was dressed as a kind of a cowboy, sort of the man in black, you know. I dressed in a full sort of trendy, flashy Nehru suit with the love beads and all this stuff. And who am I missing? Oh, and Jay, our bass player, dressed in a tutu with the little skirt and army boots.
That's like a ballerina outfit.
Yeah.
Went over great at North High School.
One time, these gigs usually went over. We had a built-in audience because we were radio stars. We had a hit record locally. Once in a while, it turned wrong. I think it was West High where we stirred up some sort of antagonism. And Jay, I don't know where.
They threw pennies at us.
And I don't know where Jay got his information, but he says to the audience who are already coming toward us, he says, "You don't buy our records anyway." And we cleared out of there really quickly.